People of Note on Fine Music Radio is proudly brought to you each week at this time by Peter Turin Productions. Fine Music Radio, and this is Rodney Trudgeon welcoming you to this week's edition of People of Note. I'm very excited to introduce you to my guest today, someone whom I've wanted to have on the program for many, many years. He's Angelo Gobato, who was born in Italy and emigrated to South Africa in around about 1950 and has been here ever since. He began his musical studies while he was still at school. And in 1965, he appeared as Quetzal in The Bartered Bride with K-Pab, and then in the same role for Napak. Then he began his career as an opera director, staging Il Matrimonio Segreto for K-Pab Opera. He's held the post of resident producer for K-Pab Opera. He's been awarded the Niederberg Prizes for Opera for his production of La Forza del Destino and Turandot. And he's staged operas both nationally and internationally. In 1982, he was appointed as director of the UCT Opera School, and in 1989, appointed as artistic director of K-Pab Opera. We're whizzing through his life here because so much has gone on. In 2005, he retired as CEO of Cape Town Opera to devote more time to the growth of operatic training in South Africa. He's received a number of awards, a merit award from the Department of Arts, Culture and Heritage of the Western Cape in recognition of his outstanding achievement and contribution to the performing arts, the title Cavaliere nell'Ordine al Merito della Repubblica Italiana by the Italian government, the Western Cape Premier's Award for special contribution to the cultural life of the Western Cape, the Kula Award for Music, and an honorary doctorate from UCT. In fact, upon his retirement, UCT granted him the title of Emeritus Professor. Angelo, you're sitting here looking quite amazed at all these wonderful things that have happened to you. Welcome.
Thank you very much. It's a great pleasure and privilege to be here.
Now, look, the main thing is, apart from getting to know you and all about your life, is that you've just written a book called A Passion for Opera. You're about to turn 75, and there's a concert going on next weekend, which is sold out with Pretty Yenda and Company. So I just want to find out how all this came together. Angelo, let's begin with the book. Tell me about the book.
Well, it all did begin with the book. I moved fairly recently from a very large home that I shared with my parents and in which I had many memories of wonderful receptions and parties which were thrown for visiting artists when I was head of Cape Town Opera and UCT School and so on. But I was rolling around in this 10-bedroom house and not feeling very secure, I might add. And I felt it was time to start cutting back. What to get rid of? That, of course, is the question that besets every person who is not getting any younger, and you've got your whole life on shelves, in boxes, and a lot of it must simply go. Not having any immediate family in South Africa, it didn't seem to be much point in keeping a lot of family history for who. But I felt that my professional curriculum, my photographs, my recordings, my press clippings should really be kept until I had a chance to think about what to do with them. So they all came up with me up in Lochinvar, this beautiful apartment with a wonderful view of the
bay. What a lovely name.
What a lovely, lovely name. But you should see the view. It really is breathtaking. And there all these boxes were stuck under cupboards, and it became more and more difficult for me to get to these boxes because my knees are sort of packing up and it was very difficult to get down onto floor level. So I decided, well, let's put them on an electronic medium. So I got them out and I started writing about them and very quickly decided that, well, perhaps it should be a book. Bit difficult to decide what kind of book it was going to be. Was it going to be an academic sort of history of opera in Cape Town? But I'd spent so many years in academia that I felt it should really be a set of memories of an old man who had a passion for opera. And so I decided to call it A Passion for Opera and sort of went back in my mind from the early days when my passion for opera was discovered, very early on in my life, and how I managed to have the privilege of sharing this passion with so many wonderful students, performers, colleagues, and young singers who are now making the most incredible careers for themselves. One only has to mention Pretty Yenny, yes, of course, and everybody knows.
You must be so proud. I mean, you were integral in this extraordinary success story. You must be so proud. And isn't it wonderful that she's singing at your concert?
Well, that was the next step. Having decided on the book, I then felt, well, I was turning 75. Why not try to celebrate my 75th birthday? And I felt, well, I'd done so many productions in my life that why not try one more? And I approached Artscape and the orchestra management and found that they were most cooperative and granted me the use of the venue and the use of the orchestra. And there was one more step, which is to contact Pretty Yende and say, I know you're a rather busy girl, but could you make it? And so the date was chosen. Not precisely my birthday, but close enough. My birthday is on the 5th of July, and the concert will be held on the 27th of June. And it's completely sold out. It's been absolutely marvelous to see how Cape Town has responded to the coming of Pretty Yende to help me celebrate my birthday. And although I'm going a bit crazy at the moment, we're all looking forward to a very unique musical event.
Okay, now there's so much I want to ask you, Angelo. So we've spoken about the book, and I'm going to come back to that and to the concert. But now, as always, I'm most intrigued. A man with a passion for opera, what you have chosen. And you've been very specific about what you want us to play. And the first piece I see is from The Marriage of Figaro. And you've asked for Non più andrai. Tell me a little bit about why you've chosen this.
Immediately, because my first, shall we say, professional singing engagement resulted in my winning a gold medal at the Eisteddfod. I had been having singing lessons with the great Albina Bini. She accompanied me for the Eisteddfod. I got the gold medal. I got the Argus Prize. And as a result, I was asked to perform at the City Hall, accompanied by the orchestra with David Tidpo conducting. Gosh. And it was Non più andrai that I sang. So it was really a very, very special song for me. It's the way my professional life began.
But I'm interested also, since you're the expert, Angela, you've asked us to get the aria sung by as dark a bass as possible. And we found Cesare Siepi.
Oh, wonderful.
Why did you want this to be particularly dark? Because one always thinks it's quite light and playful.
Well, for various reasons. When I began my career, I began it as really a dark bass. I was engaged to sing Quetzal in The Bartered Bride, and Quetzal goes down to a low D, and I managed to get the role because my voice was very dark at the time. Mm-hmm. But also, I have a great penchant for dark basses. And Figaro can be sung by bass baritones, it can even be sung successfully by baritones. But for me, the real character of this jocund man comes out if it's sung by somebody like Cesare Siepi with his black voice.
Let's listen.
Non più avrai questi bei pennacchini, quel cappello leggero e galante, quella chioma, quell'aria brillante, quel vermiglio donnesco color, quel vermiglio donnesco color. Non più avrai quei pennacchini, quel cappello, quella chioma, quell'aria brillante. Non ti andrai farfallone amoroso, notte, giorno, d'incorno, giando, bella, bella, il formando riposo, narcisetto, adoncino d'amore. Bella, bella, il formando riposo, narcisetto, adoncino d'amore. Ramo stacchi stretto sacco, schioppo in spalla, ad al fianco, collo dritto e muso franco, con gran casco, con gran turbante, molto onor, poco contante, poco contante, poco contante. Ed invece del fandango, una marcia per il fango, per montoni e per balloni, con le neghi sfoglioni, al concerto di trantoni, di bombarde, di cannoni, che le palle tutti suoni, all'orecchio fa fischiare. Non ti avrai, quel pennacchino, non ti avrai, quel cappello, non ti avrai, quella chioma, non ti avrai, quell'aria brillante. Andrai farfallone amoroso, notte e giorno d'intorno girando, belle belle turbando il riposo, narcisette ad un giro d'amore, belle belle turbando il riposo, narcisette ad un giro d'amore, per un vino la vittoria, alla gloria militare.
That's the voice of Cesare Siepi, and he was singing Non più andrai from The Marriage of Figaro by Mozart. It was the first choice of my guest on People of Note here on Fine Music Radio this week, Angelo Gobato, who, as you've been hearing, has had such a stunning career. His book, Passion for Opera, is about to be released, and his concert celebrating his 75th birthday is on the 27th of June with Pretty Yende, among others. And Angelo, I want to talk about among others, because you've put together quite a cast for this last production of yours. Not that it's the last production, but let's just say it.
Well, I can't see myself being strong enough to start anything like this again, but still, who knows? Well, of course, it all began with my desiring ardently that Pretty Yende would come to sing. She arranged a very busy schedule to be able to make the concert, and we, of course, had to obtain the services of Kamal Khan, who conducted so many operas when I was CEO of Cape Town Opera and with whom I worked so frequently at the UCT Opera School. So having those two pillars of strength below me, I felt that it was time for people to realize that much as we are proud of Pretty's huge international success, she is not the only singer who is doing very well for herself. There are a number of young voices, particularly men, who have very regrettably had to leave South Africa and prove to the rest of the world that they are worthy of engagement in the highest circles. And one of these young singers is Musa Ntungwana, bass baritone. When I taught him, he was bass, but as frequently happened to basses, as the voice developed, it tends to rise a little higher. He's had wonderful successes recently singing in Moby Dick. He has also sung the role of Amonazro in Aida at the ENO, and he has also written a book.
Yes, he has. It's just been released, in fact.
Most fascinating book, and I really recommend anybody who's interested in how a young black person achieves this passion for opera and manages to live a life surrounded by ANC terrorism and uncles in politics and rugby at school and so on. Fascinating book and a fascinating singer.
Well, let me tell you, Angelo, you might be intrigued to know that he, Muzi, is my guest on this very program next week.
I interviewed
him a few months ago, actually, when his book was launched here at the Book Lounge.
Uh-huh.
And we had a lovely interview, so I wanted it to be broadcast around about the time of your concert. So he, in fact, people will be able to listen to what he has to say next week.
Wonderful, wonderful.
But back to the concert. So he's the other big star, really, isn't he, at the
he's another star. But Lucanio Moyake, of course, the tenor, may become even more well-known in Cape Town. He was recently awarded the Fleur du Cap Award, the first time that the Fleur du Cap deemed it opportune to acknowledge opera's existence. Mm-hmm. And we're very thrilled by that, and we're even more thrilled that Lucanio won this prize. He has just sung Traviata in London. He's singing really all over the world. He's extremely busy, and in fact, I've just had a message from him that he's coming a little later because an extra performance has been put in for one of his pieces, but he's promised me he will be here, and will be singing things like the famous Nessun Dorma. So Cape Town audiences will be able to really compare his voice with the best.
Actually, we're being a bit naughty, Angelo, because as we're saying all these things, are mouth-watering things, we have to remember that the concert is in fact sold out, but they are going to open the dress rehearsal the night before, I think. So let's see.
Well, let's see what happens there.
Because you also have a chorus involved, don't you?
The chorus for me was the most important and the most problematic thing, because most regrettably, because of various financial situations, Cape Town Opera had to reduce its forces, and we've lost the services of Michael Williams, who has decided to advance his career by going overseas. So the choral commitment and the support of Cape Town Opera we have not been able to share because of the economic problems. But they have been very generous in agreeing to train a chorus of about 40 members, which includes the vocal ensemble. Since I was going to do Aida, I felt 40 was going to be a little minimalistic. And so I approached Nolufefe Mshabe, a wonderful choral trainer who appeared in the early days of my bringing black voices to the opera school. She has had international successes, and she has put together a chorus of another 40 singers.
Ah, good.
And
good.
George Stevens from the University of Cape Town wants to celebrate my birthday by providing another 24 from the university.
My goodness.
So we've got a chorus of about 100 members on that stage.
Excellent. And the full Cape Town Philharmonic.
And the full Cape Town Philharmonic.
And Kamal Khan, whom, as you said earlier, and whom, as we know, is an ideal opera conductor.
Yes, yes. I think it will be something special.
Okay. Now, let's have another piece of music. The Willow Song from Verdi's Otello.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me why you've chosen this. And also, you've asked for a specific recording.
Well, if I go back to the beginning of my career and I go back to before I sang in the Astetford, my passion for opera was discovered, shall we say, by my family when I was something like 3 years old. And I couldn't stop singing when I was a young man. Before my voice broke, I imitated Mario Lanza and sang at various Italian festivals and picnics and so on. And my parents knew that if they wanted to keep me happy, they had to give me records as birthday and Christmas presents. And for something like my 13th birthday present, they chose Otello. And in particular, it was the Alberto Heredia recording of Otello with Tebaldi singing the Desdemona. And I was completely blown over by the quality of her voice, the sheer beauty, the gentleness of the soft passages, the way she could float those high notes. And the Willow Song, perhaps a little repetitive, perhaps not quite to the height of the drama of the rest of the opera, is pure, pure opera and pure beauty.
occhi, tra poco giunge Otello.
Part of what's known as the Willow Song from the last act of Verdi's Otello, with Renata Tebaldi there in her earlier Decca recording with Del Monaco and with Alberto Herrera as the conductor, the specific choice of my guest Angelo Gubato. And my recording, Angelo, and I sort of wondered why you didn't want to use it, is Tebaldi's next one, where with Del Monaco and the Vienna Philharmonic she worked with Karajan, but we had a conversation, you said, not quite as good as that one we've just heard.
Well, it was a different Tebaldi. Tebaldi had an extraordinarily beautiful voice. Toscanini called her La Voce d'Angelo, the voice of an angel. But the angelic quality of the voice didn't last all that long. She did a lot of very dramatic roles with Herrera, Tosca, La Bohème, and so on. And in all those, she sounded absolutely exquisite. By the time the FFRR recordings came and von Karajan took over, she'd lost the top. And the top became a little bit shrill. And in the Aida, for example, getting to the top C in O Patria Mia became quite a struggle for her.
Okay.
And later in her life, of course, she changed completely. She developed this huge chest and became this Verismo-type singer. But the angelic Tebaldi of the Herrera recordings is really unique and cannot be replaced in my mind.
I just suddenly have to ask you this question. How do you compare Tebaldi and Callas? The great opera question. And I can't resist asking you that.
The great opera question. I wasn't a Callas fan. I preferred, in my early youth, the angelic tones of Tebaldi. Later in my life, I began to appreciate the unique blend of vocal artistry and dramatic power that Callas could perform. And perhaps if we have time, we may hear a bit of the great competition that Tebaldi had. But much as I appreciate Callas, if I've got to listen to something beautiful, I choose Tebaldi any day.
Okay. Well, I was made a Tebaldi fan by her Aida recording with Karajan, not having heard her earlier, but she had a creamy quality that I loved in the middle. And I shall go back and listen to O Patria Mia now more carefully. But back to you, Angelo. You said that you started singing when you were very young. Your parents bought you these records. Was it then a fait accompli that you were going to be a singer?
Oh, no, 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 no.
Because you did a degree in chemistry, for goodness sake, at UCT.
You know, my parents were rather practical Italians. They supported me in every one of my desires. They allowed me to sing. They gave me piano lessons. But they felt that one had to be practical in this world. You know, one's got to make a living. And it is very difficult to make a living as a performing artist, never mind an operatic performing artist, when in those days, of course, in South Africa, there was no permanent performing company who did opera at all. So when I finished school and went to the university, I decided to go for science. I did chemistry, physics, and mathematics, and rather enjoyed it and was rather good at it. But I still had this obsession that was going to keep mom and dad happy, but that I'd land up on the opera stage. And it proved to be that way.
That's what happened. And the other thing is that then when your career took off as a singer, you're a baritone, aren't you? Or you're a bass baritone?
I started as bass. I got to a bass baritone and finished as a baritone. And now I'm a sort of squawky something or other. But as I say, very frequently with men's voices, as they develop, the lower notes tend to disappear and the higher notes tend to come out. So my main successes were singing comic roles, which are generally bass baritone roles.
I remember you very clearly at the Alhambra Theatre in Durban for NAPAC singing, I think, the Barber of Seville, Figaro.
Yes, yes, yes.
But the tenor's the other way around, isn't it? Because look at Domingo, he's come down to baritone. Seems to happen the other way with tenors, as weird as
really,
they are.
Not really. Domingo is something rather special because he's using, shall we say, his fame and his artistry to continue singing when he should really have stopped.
Very interesting.
So it's not that his voice has come down, it's that he's lost his stops. And he manages to be a good enough technician and a great enough artist to get away with singing baritone roles. But if you see somebody like Bergonzi, who was, of course, one of the finest tenors, he started as baritone, and then his voice developed into a tenor. And the Bastianini, who also was my favorite baritone, started as a dark bass and developed into a baritone. So more generally speaking, men tend to go up until they reach a certain age, that is, of course.
And then, Angelo, what made you, was there a decision that you decided, right, I'm stopping singing now, I'm going to go the directorial route and be appointed as all these posh things that you have been over the years?
Yes, it wasn't an easy decision, but the decision had to be made. Because in my early years, I had the privilege of singing not only opera, but in those days, Lieder concerts were frequent, symphony concerts doing things like the C Symphony and so on.
Yes, gosh.
And of course, Good Old Messiah and
yes, the
Creation and
yes.
all the oratorios. I could really have made a living just singing oratorios. The Messiah in Cape Town, in Durban, in Pietermaritzburg, you know, could easily pay the rent. And these days, most of these things have unfortunately disappeared. But as much as I enjoyed and was successful with the singing, I really loved directing. I loved being able to sort of put something into all the roles of the opera instead of only one. And having to do quite so much talking and explanation made my voice get very tired, and I decided the only really sensible thing to do was to stop the singing and to concentrate on the directing.
Can you remember what your last professional singing role was?
I think, if I'm not mistaken, it was Gianni Schicchi.
Okay, okay.
It was still one where you could sort of pull funny voices and and get away with
sort
it,
of
as
character
it were.
Voices,
character voices, yes.
I want to go approach a controversial thing, and that's you were at KPAB during a very difficult time, as you know, the horror of apartheid.
Yes.
But before we do that, your next piece, then we'll come back to that. Simon Boccanegra, a scene from that. Tell me about what we're going to hear. The council chamber scene.
Well, this is probably the single Verdi scene that is closest to my heart. Simon Boccanegra was not one of Verdi's late operas, but when he was approached to collaborate with Boito in the writing of late operas such as Otello and Falstaff, Verdi wanted to try out how his work with Boito would go. So he gave him a challenge. He says, I've got a table with rickety legs. It's called Simon Boccanegra.
What a lovely description.
You know, it doesn't quite stand properly. If you can fix the table and you can put the proper leg on it, go ahead and we'll talk. And Boito wrote the council chamber scene, which is pure late Verdi and has the most incredible combination of poetry and music that I have experienced in any opera. It speaks about the Doge of Genoa, not Venice, who wants to stop the perilous warfare between the political parties at the time, and he says, "You brother murderers, just look out at this wonderful bay. Look at the olive trees that grow there, with their branches asking for peace. Look at our festival of flowers, and all I can cry is for peace and for love. And I look out at our wonderful bay, at our olive trees, at our festival of flowers, and only wish somebody could persuade the current dispensations that that's exactly what we need."
Sentite, ma d'altro voto più generosi io vi richiedo. La stessa voce che tuonò su Rienzi e Paticinio di gloria e poi di morte. Messaggio del romito di Sorca, ei per Venezia supplica pace.
Attenta il bisverdi, bel cantor della bionda vignonese.
Guerra a Venezia!
E con questo l'atroce aderiti d'Italia, perge Caino. La sacra cruenza, Adria e Liguria hanno patria comune.
E nostra patria terra.
Al clamor.
Piazza dei Fieschi!
Alla sua bassa!
Ecco, una turba di fuggenti! Ascolta! Si spiega le parole!
Guarda, guarda!
E lui, e guarda! Gabriele Adorno dalla plebe inseguito! Accanto a lui combatte un guelfo! A me un arado!
Paolo, oddio, sei guelfo!
Consoli del mare, gusto!
There's a scene known as the Council Chamber scene from the opera Simon Boccanegra by Verdi, and a choice of my guest on People of Note here on Fine Music Radio this week, Angelo Gubato, who's about to celebrate his 75th anniversary. He's released a book called A Passion for Opera, and he's having a concert which is sold out on the 27th of June. So we must stop teasing people, Angelo. You know, as you went into that, you gave a very moving introduction to that last piece, saying it's like here looking out over the bay. You must be tremendously proud that a number of black singers now have passed through your hands and have been so successful, because you were here during the horrid years of apartheid, the tragic years of apartheid. You had to deal with those rules over all those years.
Well, shall we say, a happy period it wasn't. But very early on, when I began my singing career, and it began singing for KPAB, it began singing in the Alhambra, but very soon coming to the Necco, which was, of course, for whites only. And one had to decide, do I pack up and go overseas where the political situation might be easier? But if everybody is going to leave, who is going to discover the wonderful voices that must be in South Africa? You see, I grew up listening to the Eoan group at the City Hall. And it was very clear that people in very humble professions had both a passion for opera and the most incredible voices with which to achieve this opera. And I said to myself that if these voices are present amongst the so-called colored community of the Cape, which is a very low percentage of people in South Africa, what happens if we discover the passion amongst all the real population of South Africa, the majority of whom are blacks? And without taking too long, it was a difficult period, but we were successful. I had enormous amount of help from a lot of private individuals, from funding, and we managed to persuade people to trust the fact that opera was not a colonial hand-me-down, that opera was a passion which is born in the human soul. And it can be born in the human soul of somebody born in Chile, in Antarctica, in Korea, in China. It really doesn't matter.
Or in a squatter camp in South Africa.
Or in a squatter camp in South Africa. Yeah. And many of those people got the opportunity of leaving the squatter camps and coming to UCT and starting to build vocal careers for themselves. And that I have been allowed to be part of this is a great privilege for me, and I will remain grateful to these students who worked so extraordinarily hard and who are still working extremely hard. And my only sadness, as Simon Boccanegra says, why must they now reinvent the wheel and leave South Africa to find good work? Will somebody not reinvent a new form of National Opera Company or Performing Arts Company that will give work to all these wonderful choristers and soloists that have this incredible passion for opera and are on our very doorstep?
Because they're leaving, aren't they? As you said much earlier, they're leaving.
Well, you have to. There's no work in the country. So yes. What can you do? Yes. If you want, you've been trained, you've been successful, you can hold your head and your voice high amongst international competition, but there's no work here. What else can you do but leave?
In those years of apartheid before 1994, were you allowed to have black students on the campus? Or how did you get around that?
There was the possibility for black students to register at the UCT if they got a permit. Like many other things in the apartheid era, you had to have permits for
various
things.
Like the famous pass thing, yeah.
And there were a few who did this, but obviously it was not something that a lot of people felt like tackling.
Yeah, yeah.
And it only happened when Mandela was released in 1991 that the message got through, and the work that I had done with Vetter Wise, our chorus master, and with Michael Williams, who had written African operas, and we'd been to the schools, these young people, the floodgates opened, and they all rushed to the opera school. And I remember when I was granted my doctorate, I gave a little talk which said, well, when I started at the school, we had something like 20 students, and two of them were black. We now have over 200 students, and two of them are white.
Yes. But where have all the white singers gone? Well, they, of course, have had the opportunities, haven't they?
They've had the opportunities, and they've... But they're coming back slowly. A lot of them have registered at UCT again, but with greater financial possibilities. You know, their parents probably feel, oh, well, you know, if you don't go overseas, you won't compete with the right sort of channels. And in South Africa, if you're not the right color, you're not going to be allowed. It's, you know, the usual
nonsense.
It's all
nonsense. The usual, absolutely.
It's the usual nonsense.
Let's forget about the usual nonsense. Please. And listen to music. Now we have, from the famous recording of Tosca, Act Two, a scene with Tito Gobbi, who I gather is a little bit someone you admire, rather, Angelo, and Maria Callas.
Well, Tito Gobbi was the acting baritone, as far as I was concerned, because I did love singing, but I adored acting as well, and the performance of opera is encapsulated in everything that Tito Gobbi did. He could sing roles like Scarpia, he could sing Falstaffs, he could sing comic roles, he could sing...
Famously Figaro, the Barber Figaro, of Seville, that lovely
Barber
recording
of Seville,
of his,
you know, he just got into the character. And when you put him together with a singer like Callas, there was real drama that was made on the stage. And in the very, very famous scene which just precedes the very well-known Visi d'Arte, there's that wonderful recording made by Gobbi and Callas, and I think that is pure music drama.
A scene from Act Two of Tosca, that famous scene with Scarpia, Tito Gobbi and Maria Callas there. And yes, I know Visi d'Arte is just there, but we wanted you to hear that scene just before Visi d'Arte, the choice of my guest on People of Note this week, Angelo Gobato. Angelo, we're right towards the end of the program now, and one of the things I wanted to mention, because of your passion that you have had for enthusing black singers to come in and how that must have meant to you, you were very associated with the very successful production around the world of Porgy and Bess, weren't you?
It's
a big sigh.
A big sigh about Porgy and Bess. There's a chapter in my book saying there's life after Porgy and Bess.
Oh, really?
Because Porgy and Bess was a very important episode in the history of Cape Town Opera. The big problem with Porgy and Bess was, of course, to get the musical rights. Because of all the apartheid era and the struggles, they were also combined with the fact that the American companies felt that they had a right to Porgy and Bess, and that therefore they would have a right to tour it internationally rather than allow other companies to tour internationally. To get rights to have it performed in South Africa, after 1994 was really quite straightforward.
Okay.
Simon Estes came out for a Cape Town Opera Festival that we did. He fell in love with our young voices. He went back and reported the kind of work we were doing, and we immediately, that opened the doors for us, and we got the South African rights for Porgy and Bess. However, our chorus master at the time said to us, but with a chorus like this and with soloists like this, you should really be touring Europe, because he knew the company that toured from the States, and he said, your production is quite frankly much better.
My goodness.
And you would be able to put it on at a cheaper rate than the Americans.
Yeah.
And that was difficult. That was the big sigh, because it took a lot of persuasion. But we finally managed the persuasion. Michael Williams was very clever about this. He managed to get a company in Norway that was interested in the opera. And since Norway and Sweden were out of the route that the American companies normally traveled, we got the rights. And when we'd opened the door there to get the rights for the rest of the world, came quite a second nature, as it were. And yes, it was a very, very successful opera. I pulled out of the production when I left Cape Town Opera, because it's a very difficult opera to mount, and I felt that I had my say with it. Mm-hmm. Christine Krauser took over. She revamped the whole production, and it's still touring to this day.
Yes, it is.
And it is only because of recent problems with terrorisms and many other stories that contracts which had been promised to Cape Town Opera to mount Porgy and Bess have been pulled back, and that created the financial problems that Cape Town Opera has been going through.
Now, to end on a positive note, Angela, well, that is positive, actually, the success story of Porgy and Bess, but the drama surrounding it. Are you now sitting back looking over this wonderful career that you've had in the world that you've absolutely loved and for which you've had a passion?
Yes, absolutely. I feel, you know, if I left tomorrow, I would be perfectly happy. A lot of people say, no, but you can be here for many more years. And I say, give me a Requiem Mass and let me listen to a Requiem that gives me peace and let me drift off without the problems that could come with old age. My great fear is, what happens if I get paralyzed, if my legs don't go,
yes,
if I lose my eyesight? My mother lost her eyesight, and she remained paralyzed for something like 4 years of her life.
Okay.
So I have that experience. I have no family, nobody to look after me. So I would rather drift off in a kingdom of peace. And I do believe that on the other side, there is a kingdom where you can listen to wonderful music in great peace, and where people who have been enemies in this life may stretch out their hands to each other and become musical friends.
I say hear, hear to that. Angela Gobato, it's been a joy talking to you. Thank you for all you've done for opera in South Africa and in Cape Town, and for all the people that you've inspired and that have passed through your extraordinary knowledge. I look forward to reading your book, A Passion for Opera. I know your concert is full, but there's always the dress rehearsal. Angela, thank you very much.
Thank you, Rodney. It's been a great privilege chatting to you.
People of Note is brought to you each week at this time by Peter Turin Productions.
This December, something extraordinary is coming to Cape Town. Experience the global phenomenon Matilda the Musical, inspired by the magic of Roald Dahl, live on stage at Artscape. The New York Post says, believe the hype. Don't miss the musical of the decade, proudly brought to you by Peter Turin and GWB Entertainment, in association with the Royal Shakespeare Company. Be a genius. Book now. FMR.